Come there so that you'll have no way out but Jesus Christ. You'll have no way out but the way that he opens. He puts you out in an opening, you'll take every way and every way out, and you'll make up your own. He's got to back you up against the wall. And that's why you get upset at me, because I've got to back you up against a wall. There's no way out but just one. Suffice to say, now they have their backs up against the wall. Verse 10, and when Pharaoh drew nigh, the children of Israel lifted up their eyes, and behold, the Egyptians marched after them, and they were so afraid, and the children of Israel cried out unto the Lord. See, as soon as Pharaoh comes back, he or she puts the fear of God in you again, don't they? Because that's still your God. We haven't dealt with them yet. They're upset because you gave up their temperament and their passion and their disposition. So now they're coming to get you. And they're probably saying, what do you listen to that Moses for? Man, we took care of you for all this time. What are you doing? That man, he doesn't know what he's talking about. And after all, he's only a man. So you see, now they're afraid because Pharaoh's coming. So they turn and very piously cry unto the Lord. And then in verse 11, and then they said unto Moses, because there were no graves in Egypt, hast thou taken us away to die in the wilderness? The man didn't take him out of there. Who did the plagues? See, Moses just did what he was told. And how many people were drugged by the throat out of Egypt? You see, the minute you get out in the wilderness and you find out what it's going to take to stay and head for the land of rest, all of a sudden you try to make Pharaoh glad at you again by turning on the preacher and saying, look what you've done to us, man. Did you bring us out here to kill us? And he says, why hast thou dealt with us to carry us forth out of Egypt? That's for Pharaoh's ears, isn't it? That's so your mommy and daddy will not dislike you so much. You say, well, I don't know what that preacher's talking about. You sure did when you were coming out. See, there's really no problem taking the children out of Egypt. That's easy. You know where the real battle is? Taking Egypt out of the children. And that's where my fight is with everyone in here. Not getting you out of Egypt, that's no problem. Thank you, brother. Nothing at all. But you see, Pharaoh and you are both not too bright. You think God's going to let Egypt go into the land of rest? It only took 10 plagues to get the people out of Egypt. But man, it takes a whole lot of doing to get Egypt out of the people. See, all of a sudden, when you realize you can't take those things with you, you turn on the preacher. Verse 12, is not this the word that we did tell thee in Egypt? And then they lie, don't they? Saying, let us alone that we may serve the Egyptians, for it had been better for us to serve the Egyptians than that we should die in the wilderness. You lie. Man, when you went to the altar, you didn't say, oh, leave us alone. We don't want to be saved, Lord. You came quick, kicking and screaming, squalling and bawling. And you asked for it. You asked for salvation. You asked for deliverance. And I've listened to everyone in this room at one time or another, and I'm going to listen to you again with your prayer request. Help me with this. Help me with that. Help me get rid of this. And then when I tell you how, you say, I'm tired of hearing that. Well, why did you ask? You certainly aren't tired of asking. Verse 13. Now Moses makes a typical mistake, and one you wish I would make. And Moses said unto the people, fear ye not. Stand still and see the salvation of the Lord, which he will show you today. For the Egyptians whom you have seen today, you shall see them again, no more forever. In other words, sit back, relax. You don't have anything to do. God's going to do it all for you. You don't have to give up a thing. God's going to kill Pharaoh for you. God's going to do it all. And you know there's a lot of preachers that fall for this. And they'll tell people exactly what they want to hear when they say, oh, I'm tired of hearing this. There just seems no rest for the wicked. I'm tired of hearing it. I say, oh, fear not. God's going to take care. You don't have to do a thing, sister. Brother, just sit back and be cool. God loves you. He knows where you're at. Let's just wait on the Lord. And then you make it worse. And he says in verse 14, the Lord shall fight for you, and you shall hold your peace. Treat them like babies, right? You don't have to do anything. Now you would think that Moses now have everybody happy, right? Look at verse 15. And the Lord said unto Moses, Wherefore criest thou unto me? Speak unto the children of Israel that they may go forward. In other words, what God is saying, how dare you come to me and tell me to do for them what they can perfectly well do for themselves? How dare you tell them they don't have anything to do but just sit back and watch me mop up all their habits for them? He says, you go back and tell them to go forward. Tell them to start growing. Tell them to grow up. Tell them to start putting one foot in front of the other and start making some progress. So you see, ultimately, Moses ended up with everybody mad at him. I shouldn't say mad, displeased. He wasn't pleasing anybody because he tried to please everybody. Now, I have the same choice that Moses had, and so do you. I can have you upset and God at me, or I can have just you or just God. But see, I try to figure out, well, how could I have just God upset? Tell them what they want to hear? You still hate me. Because ultimately, when it doesn't work, you're going to blame me. So I can't please you either way. So I never even give it a thought to try, to be very honest with you. But suffice to say here that Moses learned a bitter lesson here. Number one, the people that you deal with are a bunch of liars. And they're a bunch of cowards. And if you listen to what they tell you, they'll start preaching to you, and then you will become their sheep. And you all think you're going back to Egypt, but I'm telling you, you're not. Now, you see what happened to Moses here? You see what happened with the people? You see what happens to you when you come and make a decision and you decide you're going to get something out of your life? It comes back, doesn't it? To make another shot, to make another approach, and also to get you to turn against the individual who told you what you said you wanted to hear to help you get out of what you said you wanted out of. They always come back, and it's always my fault. And sometimes you go out and say, hey, Pharaoh, how about a ride? And you lift up your leg, your dress there, or your pants, and show your scrawny leg. Hitchhiking, inviting the same trouble you just got out of, you invite it back. Because you still want validation from the old habits. Let me tell you how this works now. Let's go back and we'll see. If you really want Egypt out of you, or if you just want it out of Egypt. Verse 10. And when Pharaoh drew nigh, the children of Israel lifted up their eyes. Remember, the word Pharaoh means king, which means the head of a kin. The head of a kin who's the absolute monarch. In other words, a relative of yours who you resemble and are kindred by blood. That individual who you are the same by passion, temperament, and disposition. In other words, that individual whose firstborn you used to be. Now this individual is drawing nigh. It happens every single time. For those of you that it's already happened to, you know what I'm talking about. For those that it hasn't, listened, because it will. Drew nigh means to approach in order to be near. Drew nigh means to make advances in order to make a proposal. Let's have a little coexistence here, okay? It also means to make advances in order to make a request. Approach or drawing nigh means getting into position either for landing or bombing. See, you can have it either way, but you're going to be dead either way. It's drew nigh. Want to land or bomb, whichever one you want. Now, if you don't give them permission to land, they will drop something on you. You see, you need to understand what's coming. And you need to understand why it's coming. They're getting into position and lining things up. They either want to land again and take dominion again. If they can't land, they'll bomb. If you play the silly game they want to play with you. Drew nigh also means coming closer by appearing to be an approximation or a similarity. Oh yes, we don't quite agree, but... And then they're back in, right in the middle of the landing field again. See, what they really want is they want dominion over you again. And let me tell you how I know, and you can know, whether you're in danger of giving it to them. It says the minute they saw Pharaoh, and the minute he drew nigh, they became sore afraid. Sore means wholly, speedily, diligently, completely afraid. Completely. That's what sore means. Now, what does the word afraid mean? It'll tell you why Pharaoh affects you that way. Afraid means to revere and thereby be afraid. It means to regard with deep respect and deep love and deep awe. So when someone comes back to you to point a finger at you and tell you what you've done in the name of the Lord that you know has freed you, and you get upset and you get worried about that, it's because you still love them. You still revere them, or they wouldn't have that effect on you. You still care what they think. You care what they say, and that's why they're coming. You see, if you didn't care, they wouldn't come. Now, I didn't say don't respect your Pharaoh, your mother, dad, whoever it is. I said don't revere them. See, but suffice to say here, they're so afraid. They revere these people. They regard them with deep respect and deep love and deep awe, which incidentally is everything you said you gave to Jesus Christ. But the word afraid or revere also means to venerate. Now understand this, the only Pharaoh from your past that can draw nigh and make you sore afraid and cause you to cry out unto the Lord is that Pharaoh that you still venerate. Venerate means to worship and to love. Do you understand what I'm telling you? You will not hear anything that you don't love and worship. So when you tell me you're afraid of this or that, I know it's because you love and worship it. You venerate it. You're in reverence of it. Because God said, thou shalt love, and the fear belongs to the God, to God himself. So you see, when you start getting weak-kneed and jello-spined because Pharaoh is drawing near, it's because you still have a worshiping attitude and a deep love and awe towards your Pharaoh. The word venerate is an interesting word. Tell you how you got into this mess. Venerate comes from the word venerate, comes from the word Venus. And that's how they got you into it. You know who Venus is? The goddess of love and beauty. The one that told you you were the most beautiful little girl on the face of this earth. The one that told you you could do no wrong. You were godlike in qualities. I suspect that your diaper smells just like anybody else's, but to them, you were godlike. Goddess of love and beauty, the one that sold you a bill of goods as to how wonderful you were. Incidentally, it's the same goddess that got you later on when your father came in the purpose and in the person of your husband and gave you the same song and dance about how lovely and beautiful and what a beauty you really were. Isn't it amazing how he changes his tune after that? The only thing he wants out of you is supper. Tell you what he really loved, didn't it? Venus also means love and desire for a friend. Aphrodite, the aphrodisiac. You see, God says you can tell who these people are because when you see them, you care what they think. It's important to you what they think. And they put you in this state of fear, which is really reverence. And then when that happens, it says they cried out unto the Lord. Now, it didn't say they prayed to the Lord. It says they cried out to the Lord. Now, I'm going to share something with you that's really important. Cried out means to cry out in contempt of God. To cry out and to disparage God. You see, what they really thought is God's fault for where I'm at. Contempt means the act of showing disrespect for the authority or the dignity of a court by disobedience or unruliness. contempt means, or cry out means, to disparage. It means to lower in esteem and discredit something that you esteemed and credited at one time. It means to speak slightingly of and to show disrespect for and to belittle. See, when they cried out to the Lord, they weren't asking for deliverance. They were moaning and groaning. Is it starting to sound familiar? Because you see, you want your precious Pharaoh to love you, and you want God to love you, and you want everybody to love you, just like it was at home. But it's not going to be that way. Somebody's not going to like you too well. And you can decide who it's going to be, but you can't have both. Cried out also means to discredit, which means to reject as untrue, to cast doubt on, and it means a loss of belief or trust. In other words, when you get out in the wilderness and Pharaoh comes back and your fear comes back, you start doubting the very person that told you what was necessary to come out in the first place. Even though you tested it, you saw all the miracles, all of a sudden you're starting to have doubt. Now, you know the interesting thing about this? And I see this all the time. Now I have people that are doubting and are starting to say, I wonder if this is really true. Well, wait a minute. You believed me when I told you the truth that set you free from eternal damnation and from sickness and from disease and poverty and pain. That you believed. When I said you could trust God for all your bills, for promotions, for money, for cancer, for anything that was ailing you, you said, praise God, hallelujah, thank God for Reuben, he's telling us the truth, amen, and I'm free, and you are. You believed, you trusted, and you respected when you heard the truth to free you from the things you wanted to be free from. Ah, but now there's a change. Now all of a sudden I'm hearing different things. All I hear is negative. No matter what I do, it's wrong. Are you not Fred's son? How do you know? You know what's happened here? We finally got to the things you don't want to give up. We finally hit dead center on the things you don't want to give up. Because when I told you the same truth, the message has not changed one iota. You got practically rolled on the floor in delirious joy of what you were freed at. And all of a sudden, everything I hear is just so negative. Oh, no, it isn't. It's the same message. It's time to give up things now you don't want to give up. And you think God doesn't know? Listen, if I know, I'm not telling him anything he doesn't know. He told me. So you see, when you start giving me that routine, all it does, it builds a fire under me. The steam goes up. Don't ever tell me, I don't want to hear this. This is negative. All I ever hear, that's like putting a raw meat in front of a starving dog. You're crazy. Don't do that to me. I can't control myself when I see that. The Lord says, there it is, man. This is the one thing they didn't want to get rid of. Get him. Don't do that. That's dumb. Don't do that. Fair warning. See, we're at the point now where we're at the things you don't want to give up, which really what God was after all the time. Because the things you wanted to give up because you and couldn't because you lacked truth and ability, you were already in agreement. You wanted to give them up. And all he did is show you how. But the real thing that separated you from God in the beginning were the things you were doing that you didn't want to give up. So you wanted to be pious and righteous and religious and all those things by always talking about the things you wanted to give up but couldn't. And now you have and you do. And now we get to the point where you don't want to give up anymore. Isn't it strange that the very truth you loved so much when it released you from the things you didn't want, now that same truth becomes tiresome and negative. Now the truth and I become your enemy. But you see, I know better. I'm not your enemy and neither is the truth. It's your friend that's the problem, not your enemy. It's those things you still want to hang on to. And you think I care? Listen, don't wave a red cape in front of a bull. That's dumb. It is not going to back me off any at all. What it does is you really home in and you show me where you need another zing. That's like putting a next where it belongs, you know? See, so the Lord wants you to understand that he's wise to you, and he wants to make you wise to you. You see, that Pharaoh's coming back, and he's starting to say things like, my God in heaven, don't you ever get anything but negative there? You always got the same thing every time. It's still the same Bible. Why did it become negative all of a sudden? Well, like I said, it's because now you have no choice but to apply it to the things you didn't want to get rid of then, you still don't want to get rid of. And rather than admit that, you somehow want to put the blame on me that somehow overnight, you know, Halloween came or something happened, the full moon, and I've turned into the werewolf. Well, I wasn't the werewolf when you were getting healed of the things you wanted to be healed of. It was the same message. When it took away your pain and your cripplings and your poverty and your anxieties and your worries and all and your exes and all those other things that you didn't want. Man, you sure loved it then. You lapped it up like a hungry dog. That's like a dog got thrown in a bowl of a barrel of Alpo, man. You went crazy. But now we're singing a different tune, aren't we? And I know what's happened, and so do you. We finally got down to the things that had to be done from the beginning, the things you never were in agreement with God. It takes a fool to say, I'd rather stay sick and die. You always were in agreement with God on that. What dummy says, I want to be poor and starve to death? You've always been in agreement with God. But you see, now we come to the point where we separate the phonies and the ones that are trying to continue to use God as a cloak to cover their harmful appetites is what it is. Now, isn't it strange that God says here, look, he says, look, you are showing contempt for God. That's what cried out unto the Lord means. You're showing disrespect for God. You are having a disparaging attitude towards your God. Now, they didn't say anything to God. Look at the next verse, verse 11. They said unto Moses. Now, understand this. If it's God and you believe this, if it's the Lord Jesus Christ talking to you when I open my mouth, then who do you think you're talking to when you talk back to what came out of my mouth? You're showing contempt for the Lord. These are not my ideas. Besides, as I said before, it's the same message I gave you when you wanted out. Now all of a sudden you have contempt. But you see, you think that by showing contempt to me, that somehow you're not showing contempt to God. Well, it wasn't my idea in the first place. See, they really are showing contempt to God by speaking this way unto Moses. And they said unto Moses, because there were no graves in Egypt, hast thou taken us away to die in the wilderness? First of all, nobody went that didn't want to go. You didn't have to put the blood all over the doorpost. You could have left your crummy bones back there in Egypt and God wouldn't have given a flip about it, because you have the choice. But they were running all over for the spray guns and the paint guns and the rollers. Everybody was rolling the doorposts. They wanted out of there, didn't they? Now all of a sudden it's Moses' fault? Like I call you every day and tell you, you got to quit that, you got to quit that. And I go over to your house every day. No, 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 don't do that. I don't bother you at all and you know it. If you don't call and ask for it, you're not getting it. So don't turn on me now and tell me. Sometimes you say, all I hear is negative. Did I dial your number? You got such a short memory. I didn't call you to tell you anything. Now it seems to me that the receiver is in your meat hook. Put it down. Actually, I've got better things to do than talk to people that show contempt for the truth. I've got better things to do than that. Not things I enjoy more, though. Just better things. Says, wherefore hast thou taken us away to die in the wilderness? Wherefore hast thou dealt with us to carry us forth out of Egypt? You big baby, I didn't carry you out of anything. You staggered out, you drunk. You waddled out. Porky? I couldn't carry half of you. I couldn't carry any of you. Some of you because of the rot tonnage, in other words, and others because of what you're into, I didn't particularly like the smell. I didn't carry you anywhere. I didn't do anything for you that you didn't want done. I only gave you the message. I only answered the questions that you asked. I volunteered nothing. I pointed no fingers. I made no accusations. I volunteered nothing. I answered the questions you asked, and I answered them. Boy, did you get an answer. And then they go on with their lies in verse 12. Is not this the word that we did tell thee in Egypt, saying, let us alone. I didn't call you. Do you get that straight? How can I could say to you, leave me alone. I didn't call you. You called me. Let us alone that we may serve the Egyptians. For it had been better for us to serve the Egyptians than we should die in the wilderness. It was that good in Egypt, huh? How soon they forget, or how much they lie. Let's find out how great it was in Egypt. Go back to verse 1 of Exodus, or rather, chapter 1 of Exodus. Let's find out how great it was. Chapter 1, verse 8. It says, now there arose a new king over Egypt, which knew not Joseph. Now, we don't live in Egypt, and my name's not Joseph. So that story's not going to help us unless we make it relevant to today. I'm going to tell you what happens to you. See, over there, Joseph was their patron saint. Joseph took care of them. But now there came a new Pharaoh that didn't know Joseph. And things start getting hot and heavy for the children. You know how it happens to you? Sure, while you're home and you got a Joseph or a Josephine, in most cases, you're always all right. She takes care of you. It takes care of you. But now you're growing up. And the teacher doesn't know Joseph. And your principal doesn't know you're Joseph. And your friends don't know you're Joseph. And they don't treat you like your Joseph treated you. You got a problem. There's a new king which knew not Joseph. You see what's happening? You've come into the wilderness now, and I don't recognize your Joseph. I don't know your Joseph, and I'm not going to be your Joseph. It's time for you to grow up. And the problem there was that as long as the patron saint was there, they were treated like children. But you see what happens? God says it's time for you to grow up. You grew up when you were in your family. Physically, it's time to grow up in the church. And he's saying to me, don't you treat them like Joseph. They need to understand that there's a king now, Jesus Christ, who doesn't recognize me as your patron saint. You need a relationship with him. You need truth with him. You need to deal with him. Through me, that's fine. But don't put me in that position. I'm not your God and I'm not a Lord. You want to follow me around for a couple of days, you'll have ample evidence of that. And don't you dare do that. But see, now you're out. Now all of a sudden you have a pastor that doesn't treat you like mama. And like all the other pastors you had, who the minute you start moaning and groaning and complaining and start tightening up your wallet and cutting back on the tithing, they fold up like a bunch of little babies. You, the tithing, and the horse they come in, and I don't care about. I'm not going to treat you like mama did. But you see what's happening here. Now remember when you grew up and you start going out, and all of a sudden, all the things that were fine at home aren't fine anymore. Life got a little tough, didn't it? Now in verse 11 of chapter 1. See, it wasn't that great in Egypt, was it? Now in verse 11 of chapter 1, it says, therefore they did set over them taskmasters to afflict them with their burdens. See, now all of a sudden you got to work for a living, don't you? You don't get up in the morning and get up and find a nice big bowl of Cheerios on the kitchen table. This thing you're living with now, are you kidding? You're lucky if she gets up and washes her face, much less set the Cheerios for you. But Mama used to do it for you all the time. See, but now, and on top of that, you got to go out and work for a living to buy the Cheerios that she refuses to put on the table? Wasn't that great in Egypt, was it? That's what you want to go back to? Remember where you came from. Remember those individuals that used you physically and financially and every way, because now you have to work for a living and provide for people that do not appreciate it, including your kids and your spouse, one way or the other. See, now you got to work for a living. And nobody appreciates you out there either, do they? Because everywhere you work, everybody has a Joseph, don't they? You know, we call them getting brownie points or however you want to call it. Everybody tries to get a Joseph in the hierarchy. So as a result, no job pleases you. Why? Because you don't want to be told what to do or how to do it. Because at home, you got to do it however you flat well pleased. And now you get in a situation where you've grown up, and not only does the boss have the nerve to tell you how to do your work, the fact that he or she owns the business, built it from nothing, and you don't even know where the toilet is yet, you still know more than they do? That's not your mama. You don't like the new rules, do you? There's nobody to walk up behind you and clean up your messes. People have the filthy nerve to expect you to earn that check they give you. How dare them do that? Mom, where are you? So you don't want to be told what to do. You don't want to be told how to do it because you never did. You now complain because you must earn your living. See, now you have taskmasters. That's what it's like in Egypt. No matter what you do, you can't please anybody. If you try to please them, you're not happy. You try to please yourself, they're not happy. Nobody's ever happy in this situation. I'm explaining to you the lot, the kind of life you lived before you walked in this door. Before you knew about Jesus Christ, before you knew what kind of bondage you were in. And now you have the filthy nerve to tell me you were better off back there? Well, that's what you tell me when you say, I don't want to hear this anymore. I want to keep my habits. I want to keep my passion. I want to keep my temperament. And then you think you're talking with contempt toward me. You got another thought coming. These people were told you are talking with contempt to God himself. And don't walk out of here saying I'm God. Now, verse 13, let me tell you what happens after the taskmasters. This is what you live like in Egypt. So don't lie that it was so great. Verse 13, and the Egyptians made the children of Israel to serve with rigor. The word rigor literally means hardship. Now understand, let's home in on one word here. This is what it was like in Egypt for you before you start hearing this truth. The Egyptians made you serve, and with hardship. See, now you deal with your childhood habits, which have now grown into adult addictions. The candy you used to like as a child is now the sugar you got to have in everything. The stimulants that you needed and all that ice cream and cookies and cake and all that stuff to make you feel good is the stuff you've got in the cigarettes and the alcohol and the drugs now. You've grown and so have your habits. Now you are addicted. Now you are made to serve your appetites. Didn't start out that way. Mama was just giving them as rewards. Here, sweetheart, you can have this. Here, have a cookie. Do this. More and more. Setting you up for addiction. And these are the things you full well wanted out of to begin with. See, now your childhood habits have grown into adult addictions. You are made, the Egyptians make you serve, and serve with hardship. Cost you money. And they sell you something that you burn up and breathe the smoke. For half the price, you can stand behind my van and inhale the exhaust for one half the price. You may not look as cool, but it's cheaper. And I suspect what comes out of that exhaust won't kill you as fast as the stuff you're using now. Now let me tell you what's making you serve. Now you have these adult addictions that were childhood habits. Remember, those taskmasters are now making you serve. You don't have a choice anymore. This is what you were in before you came here, before you met the Lord Jesus Christ. What makes you serve temper? Temper gives you no option. When it goes, and you go with it. And you have no choice in the matter. You're made to serve it, and with hardship. Anger and lying and crying and emotionalism, they all fall in the same boat. You were trapped and hooked. Everybody in this room was trapped and hooked on it. And you had to serve, and you had to serve with hardship. Most of the divorces were because of that. Most of the headaches and the $10 million in Tylenol that you've already spent became because of that, because of your stupid temper. And I know you said afterwards, I'm sorry, I don't want to do that again. They don't care if you're sorry. You're made to serve them. And then from there you graduated to food and alcohol and drugs and coffee and cigarettes. These are the things that make you serve. They give you no option. You know, it's an amazing thing about, I don't understand sometimes how people think. I stand before you day after day, service after service, and all I do is explain an alternative and explain to you have a free, open option to say yes or no. And you say, I'm tired of hearing this negative. But then you turn to your own habits that give you no choice. They ask you nothing. They make you serve them. And they don't pass around a basket and ask if you will support. You must pay, and you have to like it or you don't get it. In other words, you become a slave to your own appetites, your own hungers. You have to serve them. That's where you came from. So when you turn around and tell me now that all of a sudden all this is negative and it was better back where you were, go back. You wouldn't in a million years. But you think because you have forgotten, you think I forgot. And I had, if it hadn't been for Exodus chapter 1. See, so now you have lost. See, you don't have any freedom in that life. And now comes the next phase. And look what happens now. And this is what they told him it was better for us in Egypt. And that's a song and dance a lot of you try to give me. The minute we get to the sins and the habits you don't want to get rid of. Now we go to Exodus 1:14. And they made their lives bitter with hard bondage. Remember what it was like? Bitterness because of those all those things that you had no choice but to do. Everybody that's ever walked into this church was bitter when they came in. The problem is some of you have made the cycle and you're bitter again. You know what the word bitter means? From the Hebrew, it means to be moved with choler. C-H-O-L-E-R. I'll share with you what that means in a minute. Bitter also means to be by distillation. You're distilled. In other words, when you're bitter, it's because you're being distilled. Bitter also means angry and discontent, heavy and chafed, diaper rash. See, all bitter people are suffering from diaper rash. You're chafed. That's what the problem is. Tender. Ho-ho, I can't stand this anymore. Clean your diaper and learn how to go to the bathroom and you'll be all right. There's nothing wrong with you that a little self-control over your openings won't fix. You're just chafed, that's all. That's what the word bitter means. It means to be chafed. Immature, childish. And that's the way you were when you came in. You remember that. Now it says, here's the problem. You came in bitter. You were moved with choler. Choler means yellow bile, which is considered to be the source of anger and irritability. It's also what causes your gallbladder to go boom and you lose it. Causes a lot of other internal organ problems. You're saturated with yellow bile. You're constantly angry, constantly discontented, constantly bitter. And you thought it was macho. You thought it was her fault. Your problem is you're full of yellow bile. You're moved with choler. And how does this happen? I want you to understand how you are just like a bottle of whiskey. It happens through the process called distillation, or to be distilled. See, we have these capacities inside of us, and Satan knows it. There's a wrong side and a right side to everybody. I have a right temper and a wrong temper. Now, how do you separate the two and make one come to the top? You distill it. Now, how do you distill? Distillation or distill means the process of first heating a mixture to separate the more volatile from the less volatile parts. In other words, it takes heat. Just like you make whiskey, and the stronger, more volatile stuff comes to the top, and then it goes to that coil thing, and it drops in the bottle, and that's what you drink to think you're cool. It's another way of saying fermentation. But you see what the Lord is saying here, for you to act that way, that's the way you were when you came into this church, when you were living in Egypt. Any heat, any kind of heat, any pressure, anything, started the distillation process, separated the volatile, and all of a sudden you're drunk. You're drunk on that moonshine is what it's called. That's why you're a lunatic. You're Looney Tunes on moonshine. Now let me tell you what happens when you get the heat, the friction, the tension, the pressure to cause this distillation so that the volatile part comes to the top. Right here where you start thinking, you get full of this volatile part of your bile. Volatile means likely to shift quickly and unpredictably. It means to be unstable and explosive. In other words, what God is telling you, you ain't got no more sense than a bottle of whiskey. And about as much value when you act that way. See what it's doing? See, you were totally, first you drank and ate all this garbage, and then it gets heated up in there, and then all the volatile comes up and clouds your mind, and you think you're being cool. You were angry, you were a slave to all those things, and God released you from those things, and now you come back and tell me, oh no, it was better in Egypt. I don't like all this negative stuff. Well, you're lying. Volatile also means to be unstable. It means to move capriciously from one idea, one interest to another, to be fickle. A volatile individual is not trustworthy. They're never on time wherever they're going. They always have excuses. They'll say they're going here, they end up over there. They want to do this, they end up doing that. They promise you, oh, I'll change. They're volatile. They're capricious. They're fickle.